On Parshas Noach, there's a Sicha in Chelek Gimel in Volume 3 of Likutei Sichos. By way of introduction, we know that when a person does a mitzvah, the holiness of that mitzvah, the schar, the reward for that mitzvah, is eternal and permanent and cannot be lost or undone. However, when a person does a mitzvah in an unholy setting, under unholy circumstances, for unholy reasons, then the holiness of the mitzvah is trapped, so to speak, in the klipa, in the shell of unholiness, and it is not available to the person who performed the mitzvah. So that it's an exile, so to speak, in the klipa, and therefore the reward and the benefit, the schus, that the person would otherwise have from the holiness of the mitzvah does not benefit him, does not reach him, it is not available to him, but is locked away in the klipa. Then there are methods by which that holiness can be released, redeemed, and freed from the klipa and brought back to holiness and once again become available to the person who is redeeming it, and to some degree credited to the person who performed the mitzvah. With this, we'll understand the sicha that the Rebbe, with which the Rebbe explained the difference between the first 10 generations from Adam until Noach, and the 10 generations from Noach until Avraham. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos that there were 10 bad generations, sinful generations, from Adam until Noach, but God was very patient and didn't punish them until the 10th generation, until the generation of the flood. Which means that all 10 generations were finally punished for their sins in the 10th generation, in the times of Noach, so that all 10 generations can be referred to as the generations of the flood, the Beit HaMabul. The next 10 generations, from Noach until Avraham, were also sinful, the Mishnah says, and God was patient until Avraham came, and Avraham collected the reward for all 10 generations. Now these 10 generations can all be described as the generations of the hafloga, of the dispersion. Because what was unique about these 10 generations is that they spoke different languages and they lived in different places. They were dispersed. Whereas before, everybody lived in the same place and spoke the same language. So we have here two periods, one called the generations of the flood, and the other called the generations of the haflaga, of the dispersion. Now, concerning the first 10 generations, the Beit HaMabul of the flood, it doesn't say that at the end of the 10 generations, when Noach came around, and he was a tzaddik, that he collected the reward for all 10 generations. But by the 10 generations, from Noach until Avraham, the Mishnah says that Avraham came and collected the reward for all 10 generations. Why is there this difference? Another question. The wickedness of the first 10 generations was punished by annihilation, by a flood that wiped out all the people. The wickedness of the second period of the 10 generations of the haflaga, of the dispersion, their sin was punished only by being dispersed, but not by being annihilated. What makes the question even more interesting is that concerning their punishment in the world to come, we find a difference between these two generations. The generation of the flood, everyone agrees that there's at least one opinion that says that they have a portion in the world to come, the generation of the flood. Whereas the generation of the dispersion, everyone agrees that they have no portion in the world to come. So it seems strange that the generation that was punished with annihilation, a very severe punishment, does have a portion in the world to come. Whereas the generations that were punished with a lesser punishment, with only with dispersion, but in the world to come, they have a more serious punishment, that they are excluded from the portion in the world to come. To understand all of this, we have to understand the difference between their sins. What was the major sin, the primary reason for the flood that wiped out the generation of the flood? So the Gemara says that the main reason was Gezel. That they were thieves. They robbed from each other. Which means that they violated the commandments between man and man. The generation of the Haflaga, the tower that they built, the tower of Bavel, and they were dispersed, their sin was primarily against God. Between themselves, they got along well. In fact, they all lived in the same place, spoke the same language, and were devoted to the same common project of building the tower. So between man and man, they got along very well. If their sin was between themselves and God, their faith was lacking. Therefore, the generation of the flood who violated the commandments between man and man and made life on earth impossible or miserable, therefore their punishment was that their life on earth was taken away. The generation of the dispersion, because they were good to each other, they got along, there was achdus among them, so life on earth was not destroyed by their sin. What was destroyed was their connection to God. Therefore, their punishment was not annihilation. They had the right to remain on earth because they weren't destroying the earth. And therefore, their punishment was a lesser physical punishment, only dispersion. But on the other hand, because their sin was against God, between man and God, therefore, on a spiritual level, they had a more severe punishment, that they have no portion in the world to come. Whereas the generation of the Mabul, they had a more severe physical punishment because they were doing more damage to the earth, to the world, and a lesser punishment in the spiritual level because in their connection to God, they were not as bad. They weren't lacking in faith. So the Gashmias, they were punished more severely, the Ruchnias less severely. Whereas the generation of the dispersion was punished the Gashmias less severely, but the Ruchnias more severely. Then the Rebbe gives another explanation. Another reason why they were punished more severely in this world and less severely in the world to come. The generation of the flood. And that is that when a person sins against another person, Yom Kippur cannot bring forgiveness unless the person gains forgiveness from his friend whom he had offended or hurt or cheated. So you have to go to the friend and make amends, gain the forgiveness, give back what you stole, restore what you broke, and so on and so forth. Until you do that, the forgiveness is not complete. So if a person can't find the person whom he hurt or stole from, so he can't give back what he stole, or he can't ask for forgiveness and gain the forgiveness, or he asks for forgiveness but the person doesn't want to forgive him, then even though he's doing tshuva and Yom Kippur comes and goes, the forgiveness is not complete because he hasn't yet rectified, he hasn't undone the damage that was caused by the stealing or by the offense or by the insult. So the generation that sinned between man and God was able to do tshuva and the tshuva was complete. Whereas the generation that sinned between man and man, they had to correct and gain forgiveness from each other, and they were not able to do this. They didn't do this. And therefore, even if they did tshuva, even if they regretted their behavior, the tshuva is not complete because they didn't gain the forgiveness from each other. This explains what merit, what reward the generation of the dispersion had that Avraham could collect. the fact that they were good to each other, between man and man, they behaved properly, this earned them a reward. They were, but the reward was not available to them. They couldn't benefit from it because of the unholiness in which it was performed. So the goodness and the benefit and the merit, the deservedness that they had collected in these 10 generations by being good to each other remained uncollected by the people because of their sin. In their relationship to God, the goodness was wrapped in unholiness, in klipa, and unavailable to the people. When Avram came along, and he was he excelled in his goodness to other people, in his chesed, he was able to release or redeem all the goodness, all the chesed that existed in the previous 10 generations that had been locked away in the klipa of unholiness because of their lack of emunah, because they didn't perform the chesed in holiness. Avraham was able to benefit, to gather up and to collect all that chesed, and deserved the credit for all of it because he released it. In the generation of the flood, they had not collected any such merit for physical existence, for merit in this world, and even if they had, Noach was not the one to collect it, because he too did not excel and was not special in his treatment of his fellow man, because we see that he wasn't able to bring anyone except his own children to the belief in the flood that God had that warned them, and wasn't able to make Balei Tshuva of anyone at all, even though he was given 120 years in which to build the ark and to convince people of the truth of what God had said. So Noach was not going to collect the goodness that was gathered in the 10 generations, even if there had been goodness, when in fact there hadn't been. So the difference is that Avraham collected the goodness of the mitzvahs ben Adam l'chaveri that the people in the generation of the dispersion excelled in, and he was able to collect it because he too excelled in his mitzvahs ben Adam l'chaveri. And this gives us a very powerful lesson, in that we are the last generation, Ikvus de Mashiach, the last generation of Golus, and in Golus, much goodness was performed from the time of creation until our time that was not collected, that had accumulated, and that is waiting to be released and collected and put to use, so that we can benefit from all that goodness, so that by our mitzvahs, by our avodah today, we gain, we deserve not only the reward for the individual mitzvah that we do, but by doing these mitzvahs, we are releasing the holy sparks that were collected and accumulated over the generations, over the centuries, over all of history, that was perhaps not collected because of the unholiness of the circumstances in which they were performed. And in our generation, when we do a mitzvah, we get the reward for all of that goodness that we release, like Avraham released. By his goodness, we can collect, as the last generation of Golos, we can collect all the benefit and all the virtue of all previous generations that need this finishing touch to release it from its unholiness. And by doing that, we, like the midget standing on the shoulders of giants, we earn and we deserve not only the reward for our mitzvah, but we deserve the geula, ha'amitis v'hashlema, the coming of Mashiach, b'kodev mamash. In Chelek Yud, in the 10th volume of Likutei Sichos, There's the second sicha on Parshas Noach. The Rebbe points out a very practical and very necessary lesson in seeing evil. The Torah tells us that after the Mabul, Noach planted a vineyard and he drank from the wine and was drunk and was uncovered in his tent. And his son Ham went in and saw his father's nakedness, and he came out and he told his brothers Shem and Yafes what he had seen. And the two brothers, Shem and Yafes, walked in backwards with their faces averted from their father, and they covered him with a blanket, and the nakedness of their father they did not see. So the Rebbe asks, once the Torah tells us that they walked in backwards, then it's obvious that they didn't see. So why does the Torah then have to add or say again that the nakedness of their father they did not see? So the Rebbe explains that in general we need to understand why is it that one person can see the ugliness of another. The Baal Shem Tov teaches that every time we see an ugliness, a fault in another person, it's like looking in a mirror and we're really seeing our own fault. And that's because everything is b'hashgacha pratis. Everything is arranged by divine plan, so it must be part of the divine plan that God arranged for you to see the fault of another person, which is like God talking Lashon Hara. So it can't be that God is showing you ugliness in another person, revealing another person's faults and weaknesses and ugliness to you for no reason. So we must conclude that what you're seeing is really a reflection of your own evil, and you have that fault and are projecting it on the other person. But then the Rebbe asks, isn't it also true that one Jew is responsible for another, and that we are responsible to help others overcome their faults and deal with their sins and so on? So maybe when we see another person's fault, it's not that we're seeing a reflection of ourselves, but that we are given an opportunity to help the person with his faults. Particularly since the other person wouldn't be used as a tool just for my benefit to reflect back to me my faults, there must be something that can be done for him, some benefit that will come to him in my seeing faults in him. He can't simply be used as a tool for my benefit, that I should see my faults and correct my faults. So how do we know whether we are seeing a true fault that needs to be corrected in the other person, or we're seeing merely a projection of our own fault being reflected at us for our benefit, so that we know what to correct in ourselves? So the Rebbe points out that in the Torah avoids using unholy words. Like the word tameh, the Torah prefers to say not tahor rather than saying tameh, not alive rather than saying dead. So the Torah goes out of its way and adds extra words in order to avoid using a word that is not so nice. On the other hand, we see constantly in Torah where the Torah uses the word tamei in reference to the laws of tuma and tahara, of purity and impurity. So the explanation is that where there is a halacha that needs to be stated, where the Torah is telling us a law, the Torah does not refrain from using clear and precise language, even if it's not so pleasant. But for the sake of clarity of halacha, the Torah will use even a harsh term or a negative term in order for the halacha to be clear and certain. But where the Torah is narrating a story, an event, and so on, here the Torah will go out of its way to avoid using the word tummy. As for example, the Torah tells us that when a person is not tohir, such a person has to spend his time or live outside of the city, outside of the camp. So here it seems to be saying a halacha, to be telling us a halacha, and yet it avoids using the exact word, the precise word for uncleanliness. And that's because the Torah is not telling us the halacha of the cleanliness of this person. It's already been determined that he is not tahor. It's already been determined what his status is, and that is that he is tummy. So now the Torah is simply telling us where such a person needs to live. And since the halacha here is about the living space and not about his essential condition of tumah or tahara, therefore the Torah does not use the word tumah, but rather says the person who is not tahar. So what do we see from this? That when we see a fault in another person, we're actually being told two things from above. God is telling us two things. Number one, we see a halacha. The halacha is that that when we see a fault in another person, we have to chastise him, we have to correct him, we have to help him, and we have to bring him to a higher level. So when we see the halacha that pertains to us, when I see what I need to do, when what I see in the other person reflects on me as my responsibility, my obligation, my mitzvah, my opportunity to do another Jew a favor, then I am seeing the halacha, and in terms of halacha, for the purpose of halacha, God will show us an unclean or an unholy thing in order to make the halacha clear as to what we need to fix. But when we also see the ugliness of the person, the fault is not reflected on us as an obligation or a mitzvah or a halacha, but rather we see it as a fault in the other person per se, that is telling us that we have that particular fault. Because if we didn't have that fault, we wouldn't see it as a fault in the other person. We would see it only as a halacha pertaining to us and not a description of the other person and his faults. And that's why the Torah says that when Shem and Yafes went in backwards and physically did not see their father, that was not their only virtue, but in addition to that, the nakedness of their father they did not see. They saw only the halacha, the need to do something, to correct a situation, and that is to bring a cover and to cover their father, but they didn't see, they didn't lose respect for their father. They didn't see it as a fault in their father per se, because they didn't have that fault in themselves. Whereas Chum had that same fault, and therefore reflected it. He saw it reflected back at him in his father. And the moral or the lesson of all of this is that Shem and Yafes, because they refused to see ugliness in another person, they were blessed and rewarded for this conduct with the bracha of Baruch Hashem Alikei Shem and Yafta Likim Liyafes V'Yishkem V'Ohol Shem. So by doing this, by treating each other this way, and by not seeing a chesaron for its own sake, not seeing a fault as it stands by itself, but seeing only the halacha of it. And when we do think we see a fault in another person, to realize that we're really seeing a reflection of ourselves, through this we are zeicha, we merit to become kelim for Torah. We become a keli for Torah, because Torah is all about peace. As the Medrash says, that the Torah is kulei sholim. The God says, my Torah is all about peace. Who should I give it to? I'll give it to the Jews, the nation who love peace. And by behaving this way, we become worthy, and we become capable of being the keli for sholim, for peace, which is the building of the Beis HaMikdash, which is in the portion of Shem, the portion of Eretz Yisrael that belongs to Shem. And then Yafes also comes to dwell, Be'ohol Shem, and that comes through Achdus and Ahavas Yisrael.